great. Well, hello, Michelle.
Well, hello, Georgette.
What have we here?
I've got bird nest hair, so have you.
Yeah, we're both looking a little like we've just rolled out of bed. But hey, that's why we're podcasting.
Do you know what? I have seen people who record visually while they're doing their podcasting recording.
Yeah, that's not good for us.
How do they do that? If anyone could see me right now, literally rolled out of bed.
We'd be a bit more organized if that were the case for us, Michelle, I think.
I say I would probably put makeup on, but I probably wouldn't because I haven't been doing that recently.
Not a fan of makeup these days, are you? You've got a face that can carry no makeup, though. Not
me. I don't think so.
I look like a ball of dough unless I paint my face on. But anyway, how are you today? What's new? You've been out by the look of you.
I have. I went out last night.
Out.
To a restaurant. With Andreas. It was very nice.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, being restaurateurs, it's like a busman's holiday, really, isn't it?
Oh, yes. But it's always nice to have someone else cook for you, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. I was so jealous about you going out last night. I was thinking, I wish I could go out. But I'm stuck at home because my youngest is isolating for a week.
Oh, no.
I did have a restaurant booked, but had to cancel it the day of.
God damn you, COVID.
God damn it. But let's live vicariously through you. What did you do, Michelle? Where did you go? What did you have?
I went to a fancy restaurant where I thought I would just be eating, I don't know, main course?
A salad.
Nine courses.
Whoa!
Nine courses.
What?
Yeah.
Why so many?
That's how you do it.
Oh, that's the tasting menu.
Well, no, it's only one menu. But that's actually the same concept as Andreas's restaurant.
Uh-huh.
Nine courses. Is really more like 12 once
I've done that because you have all the amuse-bouches between. I've done it a couple of times, actually. I went out to dinner twice, very luckily, with a very rich man and a group of people. I didn't know him. It was a friend of my then husband's. And we went to the Savoy and sat at the chef's table twice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. And it's even better when you don't have to pay.
I know.
I once went on a date with a dude. I didn't realize it was a Tinder date, you know, whatever. Turned up and I thought we were just going to some little cocktail bar. He took me to this fancy rare wines wine bar and he ordered a bottle of wine for us. Bottle of wine was over £500.
Who does that on a first date? Expectations must be high.
Oh. Well, let's just say he didn't get what he thought he was paying for. But
she doesn't put out on the first date. Jen will be pleased to hear.
I'm a nice girl. I mean, honestly, the wine, I didn't even think was that nice. But I sat there freaking out. I can't fucking go halves in this. I can't go Dutch.
So when do you say that at a date like that? Do you go, listen, before we order, let's just figure out, I've got a budget.
Well, I sort of didn't realise where we were. And I think I'd popped to the loo and come back and he'd ordered this bottle. And then I'd sort of looked in the menu and thought, are you fucking kidding me?
So how did you play that?
Well, I just said, oh, thanks so much for bringing me on this date. But I, you know, I can't go halves with you on this. He's like, I would never invite a woman out on a date and expect her to pay. And I'm like, great.
Oh, my God. Let's go nuts.
So then we had dinner too. Fabulous. All on him. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Do you know what? I did try at one point. I thought, because I didn't really fancy him. And I thought, can I make myself fancy him just because he's rich?
Do I have to sleep with him because he paid all this money?
No. It was more this long-term thought of, can I just fake it to be with a rich guy?
Oh my God, Michelle. Really?
Not fake it as in, fake it, but more fake it as in, can I pretend to actually really be with someone I don't like just because they've got loads of money? I couldn't do it.
No, I'm surprised that thought even entered your head, Michelle.
Oh, no, but come on. You know, we all see what reports of younger ladies with old men on their deathbed and they scoop up all the cash after they're dead. I just thought maybe that could be a quick way.
But this guy had a lot of life in him still, clearly.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He did. And it was so boring. Oh, God. Anyway, so now I'm with my lovely little Swede and we have a very nice life.
That's great. And you get to go to fancy restaurants.
See how you said great?
Yes.
That's what I tried to say last week. Apologies to anybody who actually thought I said, I'm grey, because I meant to say, I'm great, but the tea just didn't come out.
I didn't notice that, Michelle, but we can give an apology anyway.
Apologies from me, apologies to you.
Why do I always sound so Australian? I think Australians do this. They don't say the T. Often they replace it with a D. Water.
Water. But they do say things like grey. Like the shower's just been turned on. I'm grey. How are you?
Trojan. True.
Apparently that's a saying. You were telling me earlier. That's a saying that your mother started in Sydney's gay community somehow. Well, she at a cabaret took the mic. True.
Oh, no. It's a story. Let me tell you. Many years ago, my big gay uncle had come to visit my mum and they were sitting there and my sister was going out clubbing with her gay friend. And as they were leaving, they heard our uncle saying to Jen, oh, true, Jen, true. And since then, my sister and her friend always say, oh, true, Jen, true. He started saying it to all his gay mates. Now it's a thing in the gay community.
It's spread like chlamydia.
True, Jen, true. So anyway.
Oh, well, that's good. We can do a ditty about that. We've got a few new ditties coming up. And there's one about the Clayton's cat, which I can't wait to do. Not the Clayton's cat, just Clayton's. We spoke last week about Clayton's, didn't we? Which was the drink you have when you're not having a drink.
And it became, I have a cat when I'm not having a cat. And now?
It's not Cinzano. We don't need Cinzano cocktail recipes because we've found out it's vermouth and it's just a martini.
Yeah. Yeah, it is just vermouth.
Boring.
I think we had it because my dad is Italian. And he liked the Cinzano.
And how would he have his Cinzano?
I really don't remember.
Oh.
Probably neat, but I think we had both. I think we had the sweet and the dry. Vermouth. Oh. It's not vermouth. It's
vermouth. I thought it was vermouth. I asked my bartender son for some recipes and he just went martini. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, come on. Get creative.
Come on, Killian.
Now, anywho, do we have any shout-outs?
Shout-outs! We do.
Yes.
We have a listener called Jeremy Ferris, a.k.a. Jez, who is responsible for the Two Birds Yakin hashtag.
Hashtag Two Birds Yakin.
No, I just thought he just saw us yakin and thought that's Two Birds Yakin. But apparently he has us on his listening list.
Oh, that's nice.
Whether he listens or not, I don't know. Does that mean he listens or he's just got it on a list? But now he said to me, yeah, it's great. I love it. It's two birds screaming at each other in a pub. Now, you thought it was a car park, but it was a pub.
I thought you said we were screaming in a car park. But screaming in a car park, how do you do that? Shopping trolley.
No, that's a brawl.
Give me that fucking shopping trolley.
That's my shopping trolley. Get your hands off it. No. I think it's just two birds talking loudly in a pub because it's so noisy. I think that's what it's all about. That's what he meant. But
also, I don't think I shout at you, do I?
Well, perhaps we laugh loudly. I don't know. Like I said before, like I said, men hear a decibel higher with a woman and that's it. They're backing out of the room. They're like, no, I'm not here for this. No, I'm going down the pub.
Yeah. Beep, beep, beep. Yeah.
Reverse.
Straight out. Yeah. Yep. Oh, well, thanks.
So that's Jez.
For listening.
But the other shout out is to our part-time researcher and lovely listener, Yannicka Bailey, who I believe has sent us this week's topic of discussion.
Oh, thank you, Yannicka.
Shout out.
You're getting a shout out. So this week, Georgette, what are we talking about?
I believe it's something to do with fraudulent peoples.
Well, I did call this episode The Great Pretenders.
Right.
Because this story is bizarre.
Uh-huh.
And without any real motive that I can see, it's just mental. And I don't mean that the person is mental, although I'm sure there is some mental health issues. It's just a bit out there. So I'm going to just ask you a quick question, Geordie. How do you spot a fraudster when they're very good at lying?
That's the thing. You don't, do you?
I No.
guess it's just, I think it's when suspicions arise in various things, you think, oh, I think when you're at my stage of life, you're more attuned to it. But say 20, 30 years ago, you just go, oh, okay. Because if you remember, we were friends with a murderer.
Yeah.
From a previous episode, we were friends yes. with a murderer, it was called. Yeah, you think, oh, that's a bit fishy, but you just keep on with it, you know, you or boyfriends or partners or friends that you think, oh, that's a bit weird, but oh well, you know, it takes all kinds of people in this world, you know, so you just live on and think that's fine. But then at a certain point, I guess you become more aware, and I think if suspicions arise, it's worth listening to your gut.
Well, I think so too, because I think you are quite trusting. I think probably we both are quite trusting. And also yeah. a little bit live and let live. You know, if somebody's telling tall live tales.
Live and let die. Sorry. Had to do that.
But if someone's telling, you know, fibs or just tall yeah. tales or fantastical stories, you're just like, yeah. in the end, you just think, ah, oh, they're just a bit of a bullshitter, but whatever, they're my mate.
Mm-hmm.
But this case is sort of along those lines, but to the extreme.
I want to hear about it.
I'm telling you right now.
Do tell.
This case actually hit the headlines a few weeks ago, and it's about a woman who duped people all over the world into believing that she was someone else, right? And actually, she wasn't just someone else. She pretended to be loads of different people. She pretended to be a schoolgirl, a wealthy au pair, Swedish royalty, shout out to Andreas, teen sex trafficking victim,
fuck,
a talent scout for Pixar, and a Russian gymnast.
A rich fantasy life. Now, was she doing this all online?
No. IRL. In real
IRL.
Life.
IRL?
Yes. And look, for our Australian listeners, you've probably already clocked who I'm talking about. We are talking about today the 33-year-old Aussie con woman, Samantha Azzopardi. So like I said before, this whole case is pretty bizarre. And the reason it hit the news recently is because there was a court case where Samantha she'd been an au pair for this French couple. And they've remained unnamed. They don't want the association, I don't think. But this was in Victoria, in Geelong. I'll just point out to you again, she's 33. Mm-hmm. She was pretending to be an 18-year-old au pair called Saka. I don't know how that's... if
Saka?
S-A-K-A-H. Saka.
S-A-K-A-H.
I don't know. How do you say it? Saka?
Saka.
Saka.
Saka. Saka. I think it's a little bit of a hint to that French couple. Sack her. She's not the real deal. And they missed it.
Saka, mate. Saka. But look, they went ahead and hired her. And I imagine they didn't check any references, because if they did, they would have realised she wasn't 18. She was employed by them for a few weeks.
Michelle, I just thought of something else. She could also have given her name as Donna Hire Me.
Oh my
Donna,
God.
Hire Me. Donna, Hire Me.
Why did you just come up with that?
Thanks. I came up with it ages ago, but you were talking and I didn't want to interrupt.
I don't think she's that clever. Oh. But she wasn't with this couple for long. And this French couple had two kids, quite young, I think. One was like 10 months old and the other one was like 2 or 3.
Far out. And they let this woman look after those two tiny children.
Well, the thing is, I've seen pictures of her. She's pretty. And she has a very young looking face, actually, even though she's 23.
33.
33. Did I just
you
say
said
23? 33.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. 33.
That's right.
Oh, I'm still drunk from last night. What
yeah,
can I
say? Thought that.
Oh. So she said to this couple, look, she's the au pair. I'm going to take the kids on a picnic. Is that okay?
Oh,
and well, the French couple said, yeah, no worries. So she didn't take them to a park.
Oh, fuck.
10 minutes down the road. She went 200 Ks to Bendigo.
Oh my God.
Which is really, really fucking far. That's
kidnapping.
Basically kidnapping. And obviously then there were images of her splashed all over the news because the family freaked out when they realized they didn't know where the kids were.
Right.
And eventually she was spotted by police in a department store. Bizarrely, she was wearing a school uniform with these two kids, right?
That's going to turn heads.
But before she'd been arrested in the department store, she'd gone into a Bendigo clinic. And I don't know what kind of clinic it was, but she told the staff there that she was pregnant and that she was 14 years old. And she had these two kids with her.
Oh, my God.
So...
cry for help?
Look, I'm not going to give you my thoughts on this until we go through a few of the other bizarre incidents, because that was not the first time she'd had a brush with the law. So back in 2013, when she was 25, she hit the headlines in Ireland, and she was found pacing outside, up and down, looking really distressed. She was found by police outside Dublin's general post office. Mm. And actually, she became known as the GPO girl because from the moment the police found her, she refused to speak.
Oh.
Did not say a word, right? So the police took her to a local hospital, and for weeks, she literally didn't say a word. And they just came up with all these theories. And in the end, they thought that she was a traumatized victim of sex trafficking. And although she never spoke or told them her age, she apparently kind of gave hand signals that she was 14. Again, pretending to be a 14-year-old, right?
Right. Trauma this that happened to her at 14 and it keeps repeating itself. Yeah.
So...
possibly.
Yeah. The Irish police were really thorough and they went through CCTV footage and knocked on doors trying to figure out who she was. They worked with child welfare specialists all around the country trying to figure out like who this 14-year-old girl was. They spoke to missing person services all over the world. They contacted Interpol. They went to the Irish Immigration Bureau. I mean, they really put a lot of time and effort into trying to figure out who she was. And they could not get a lead on her identity. But she had braces on her teeth. Right. Yeah. So they even went so far as to contact orthodontists all over Ireland trying to figure out, like, have you put braces on a 14-year-old girl recently? All came to a dead end. There's this one police that's been, you know, in the news reporting, like giving statements about this. And he said, there was a bit of a question mark about her age, but they genuinely thought she was a minor. And because they thought she was a minor, they got special permission from the High Court in Dublin to go public with a picture of her. And they appealed to the public saying, does anybody know who this girl is?
Yeah.
And a relative came forward who said, yes, this is my niece, I think it was. And she stayed with us at the beginning of her trip to Ireland.
From Australia.
Game was up. Police realised they'd been duped into caring for her, putting her in hospital, going on this wild, crazy search trying to find out who she was. And they basically put her on a flight back to Australia, deported her out, escorted with Irish police. And she literally never spoke to anyone for the entire journey. Wow. And the Irish police and the public were fucking stumped. They're like, why would you do this? What is this all about? And there were calls, like, in the media to charge her for wasting police time by making false reports.
Yeah.
But legally, she never said a word. So she never made a false report.
Okay.
She never gave any false information. She literally never said anything. So in the end, they just put it down to her being public nuisance. And they put it down to a mental health issue and not as a criminal case.
Okay.
Look, at this point, we are talking 2013, right? And when she got taken back, deported back to Australia, she underwent a mental health assessment. But they decided that her mental health issues were not serious enough for any kind of intervention. So they let her go, which then led to a year later in Australia, there was an 18-year-old American backpacker called Emily Bamberger, and she was living in Sydney. And after all this crazy shit happened, she went to police and told her story about her encounter with Samantha as a party. So basically, for months, Emily believed that Sam, Samantha, who was now calling herself Annika Decker, was Swedish royalty, who'd been kidnapped when she was a young girl and was being basically shielded by her shielded from her family by Interpol. Bizarre. She said that she, like I said, Swedish royalty, kidnapped at a young age, moving all around the world, being looked after by Interpol agents so she wouldn't be found. And look, this girl, Emily, thought it was all a bit silly until she got an email from an address ending with @interpol.com by a man claiming to be as a party's keeper, right?
Oh.
So obviously Samantha had written this email, but right. Emily didn't know that. And she freaked out because apparently also within the email were details that she'd never told anyone in Australia, including Samantha. So she thought, fuck, this is real. And she got really scared, you know.
Details about Emily Bamberger.
Yes.
Right.
And her family. And she thought, fuck, they know stuff about me. They know stuff about my family in America. Ooh. She felt really fucking terrified, really scared. So, yeah, she decided, in the email, they said, you need to get a fake identity. So she was like, fuck, I need to get a fake identity. So she went to the Roads and Maritime Services Authority to try and, like, get a fake ID, pretend her way into it. And it worked. Yeah. So she got a new ID that said her name was Amy Fisher. And this story just goes on and on and on. So I'm just going to wrap it up with a few details. So after she got the new ID, she and Annika went up to Brisbane, flew up to Brisbane to get away from this whole fake Interpol, you're being followed, you know, you're not safe. So they went up to Brisbane. And one night, Annika, aka Samantha, woke up and said she needed an ambulance because she had this super bad headache. And when the paramedics arrived, she told them that she was 14 years old and that Emily was her sister. And Emily was like, what the fuck?
What?
But she was quite freaked out by it. So she just sort of went along with this story and went to the hospital with Annika / Samantha. And then the police looked at Emily and thought, who the fuck is this? And they arrested her
for
on kidnapping charges because they thought she was 14 years old, right?
Oh, no. Poor Emily.
I know. So when she was in the police office at police station, they discovered her fake ID and all of this stuff. And she ended up with a fucking hefty fine and was ordered to leave the country. But what happened was Samantha freaked out, was still in the hospital, ripped the catheter out. They fled, got their stuff and got on a flight back to Sydney, where then they went to some house where Samantha kept Emily prisoner for several weeks. Yeah,
what?
It's
so she
just
willingly
crazy.
Went with her, like, come on, Thelma and Louise, we're going on the run. Oh, by the way, why did you tell them that you were 14 and why, you know, I've got a massive fine to pay? I mean, she had a choice, Emily did, at loads of times to get the fuck out.
She did, but, and I think people have asked her this question, why didn't you just go, mate, I'm out, like, yeah. I'm done. And I think that she felt super scared by this Interpol thing. She really felt, and she felt as
it
if
shook
she
her.
She didn't know anyone. She was in Australia,
yeah.
And I think she was 18 years old. She's naive.
Yeah.
And remember, at this point, Samantha as a party is what, 25, 26?
Yeah.
She's
a
master manipulator. Mm. So yeah, I felt really bad. And anyway, she ended up getting deported in the end because of visa issues and whatnot, and that's when she realized that her friend Annika, Samantha,
her friend and captor,
yeah.
Don't forget to add that.
So after Emily Bamberger left, or Bamberger, Samantha ended up going to Calgary in Canada, where again she pretended to be 14 years old, and she went to authorities and told them that she was a victim of sexual abuse. She said her name was Aurora Hepburn. Again, like, she was 14 years old. She'd been sexually abused and kidnapped, and that she'd escaped from her kidnapper. And the Calgary police treated her case seriously, and they were desperately trying to find out, you know, who she was, how to place her back with her parents, where she'd come from, because they thought, fuck, if there's one 14-year-old girl here who's managed to escape, there's others. So they thought they had really, like, rescued this girl and potentially could rescue others from a sex trafficking ring. And as we know, they exist. It's a real thing.
For sure.
Yeah. And they spent weeks on this case until a caseworker in Calgary came across the Dublin story and made the connection. But this time, Samantha was charged on public mischief charge and for misleading Calgary police. And once again, she was deported back to Australia from Canada with a police escort. And look, her deception just goes on and on and on, including being a nanny for Tom Jarvis, who apparently is some Australian professional basketball player, and his wife, Jezzy, real name.
Jezzy.
And they found her online through a web service for au pairs. Okay. Again, guess they didn't check any references because she actually moved in with them. And the family thought she was awesome at first. You know, wow, what a great au pair. And again, she had told them she was like 18. But then the wife got suspicious because Samantha started using the wife, Jezzy's identity, to pretend she was a casting agent for Pixar. And weirdly, she, and this is what I don't get, she convinced a 12-year-old girl that she met on the street that she could get her a job as a voiceover artist in a Pixar movie. Mm. And, you know, there was like a weird, not kidnapping scenario, but almost a little bit like grooming scenario with this 12-year-old girl with the voiceover. I don't know. She also made a Perth family believe that she was a Russian gymnast whose entire family had died in a murder-suicide in France. And more than that, at one point, she convinced social services in Sydney that she was a teen victim of abuse, and she managed to get enrolled in school and put in a foster home.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
what is the motivation for all of this?
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's there is some speculation, but the upshot of all this is that basically she was sentenced just recently to 2 years in prison for all they could really get her on was faking her qualifications to get her job as the live-in nanny and for taking the French couple's kids across Victoria without permission. Right. I think the child was actually the charge was child stealing. And look, during the sentencing, the magistrate said the motive behind this bizarre crime remains unclear because she never got any monetary compensation for any of this. She wasn't blackmailing anyone. She wasn't extorting anyone. She never got money. She wasn't doing it for money. So that's weird because most people do this to like at least say, I've got your kids. I want, you know.
Yeah. Sure.
100 grand. Nothing.
But then the jig would be up for her. You know, it'd be over because she has a load more left in her, I think.
This
is her
so
way
too.
Of life. If she was to start extorting people, she wouldn't be able to do it again. She'd be in prison.
Well, yes, but look at Anna Delvey. She's out. But unlike Anna Delvey, I don't think that Samantha as a party was doing this for fame and fortune or just attention, you know.
It sounds to me like she has actually experienced some trauma that's absolutely changed her.
Well, during the trial, the court apparently heard that she'd been diagnosed with a severe personality disorder and a rare condition called pseudologia fantastica, which when I looked it up, it's just basically compulsive lying, where elaborate stories are told that kind of verge on the edge of believable, but where the person is sort of in a heroic position. But this is not that, because in this case, I think Samantha is always putting herself in the victim position, not as the hero.
The hero.
So I don't know. But the compulsive lying thing definitely, you know, it's what's happening here. Mm. But what I find really sad is that it just seems like she's not getting help.
Yeah.
And look, at the trial, apparently, it was recommended that she could be released if she received voluntary treatment and case management, like under some specialist services arrangement. But she refused. And then she went to, she was in prison and basically, she's about to get out because when this whole case kicked off 2 years ago, she was detained. She was put in prison and they've sentenced her to 2 years. So she's got like basically a couple of months left and she's out.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. But prison have apparently refused to give her a referral for any mental health intervention.
Oh. Where's her family, Michelle?
I don't know what's happening with the family. I have no idea. Look, like you sort of said, you can't help but wonder what happened to her at age 14 and why yeah. she's constantly going back to that age. And look, maybe she has a split personality, like they said, they said personality disorder. Maybe she has yeah. multiple personalities and one of them is 14 and that's yeah. a dominant one that keeps coming up. I don't know. I have no idea.
Good theory.
But when you break it down, like, is prison really the right place for someone like her? Because is it a mental health issue? Is she a danger to herself? She's obviously not necessarily a danger to others, but she's a fucking nuisance. She's a public nuisance. And she
taking
will
re-offend.
Children. She will re-offend. You know, she will continue doing this. It's compulsive for her, I would say.
I wonder how far she would go as well. I mean, she's already kidnapped one girl and she's kidnapped two children. And God knows if the alarm hadn't been raised, like it wasn't with Emily Bamberger.
No.
What would have happened?
Yeah,
to
I
them?
Mean, who knows? But I don't think she's ever been charged with harming someone.
Right.
I mean, obviously, like, keeping that girl prisoner was not great, but...
Well, it just... She needs help.
She does need help.
Some kind of help. I'm surprised that they haven't realised this and referred her.
I mean, I wonder now, because she's got this prison sentence, if they can now force, you know, her to have some kind of treatment, but... I don't know. It's just a bizarre case. And honestly, I think this is not going to be the last time we hear about Samantha Azpardi.
Well, incredible. Thank you, Michelle. And thank you to Yannicka for hearing about that and letting us know.
Droppin'.
Well, I've got a story that's about fraud, but it's more about gender fraud. It's about people who are pretending to be male when they're actually female and grooming, again, young girls into having relationships with them. Have you ever heard about this? Because it's a thing.
Do you know what? I feel like I have heard things about this, actually. Maybe read stories. But what have you got?
Well, I've got a story that starts in 2011. It's Chester, England, which is famous for being the home of Hollyoaks. And it's also where all the northern footballers live and their fancy wives. It's just west, to the west of the country under Liverpool, Chester.
Okay. Yeah.
An attractive 27-year-old uni student by the name of Chloe, which is not her real name, was contacted on Facebook by a handsome, athletic, half-Filipino young man called Kai Fortune, who was looking for friendship.
Okay, what is with all these weird names?
I don't know. They're Fake-a-roony so fantastical.
I know. Kai Fortune. Kai Fortune.
Kai Fortune. Hello, my name is Kai Fortune. Anyway, they soon became boyfriend and girlfriend despite having never met. And Chloe was, of course, keen to meet IRL, as you called it earlier, as he was a student at the same uni. But for more than a year, he refused to meet.
Even though they were going out?
Yeah.
They were having an online intense...
Well,
look, have you ever had that happen to you where you've been...
No.
I have.
I've been contacted
times.
By people on MySpace. Wanting to hang out. Yeah. Anyway.
But, no, what I meant was, like, have you ever had sort of an online friendship where you've never met the person, but they've contacted you, and then actually you do end up having...
No.
I have.
I've had pen friends in the 80s.
I have where you've got, you know, where you end up sort of talking to someone you've never met before. You don't know them, but you end up talking on Messenger. And it's amazing.
Will that be Grindr, Michelle?
No. Because this is how I ended up becoming good friends with someone that I am very, in real life, very good friends with now. But we first met through Facebook, actually. And it's amazing how quickly you feel that you know someone, that you can trust them with personal details about yourself, and that
By
you feel very...
spilling your guts online.
Very intimate. It's a very intimate sort of situation. So I do think that people can become drawn into these online chats, because if the people are saying, you know, if they're being genuine or you think they're being genuine, it feels like a real connection. It really does. Mm. I mean, I'm very lucky that, you know, when I was chatting to my friend, we ended up being great friends in real life and have been for more than 10 years now.
Well, the reason why they couldn't meet, Kai said, was because he'd been disfigured in a car accident. He also mentioned at some point that he had a heart condition. At another point, he had told her that he was seriously ill with cancer. I mean, all of these things.
He's a catch.
He's a real catch, but I mean, he was gorgeous. And Chloe believed him. So Kai suggested that she meet one of his best friends, Gail Newland. So the two women did meet and they had a lot in common, and they would go to concerts together, they'd watch films, they'd go play netball, hang out.
And talk about Kai.
Possibly talk about Kai, I don't know. But the thing that Chloe liked most about Gail Newland was that Kai trusted her so totally.
Yeah.
So more than a year had passed, and then one day Kai agreed to meet her at a hotel where they consummated their relationship.
What?
They did. They met and they had sex. But strict rules were imposed by Kai. Kai told her he was so anxious about his appearance that she would have to wear a blindfold and she couldn't touch him because of his injuries. So it was a very gingerly having sex with blindfolds here, there and everywhere. And she had to keep her hands down by her side or whatever.
Oh my God, maybe he tied her up.
Well, later on it does come out that she did willingly have her hands tied behind her back. But there's more to come about that. I'll fill you in. He said his chest was bandaged because of a nozzle that was attached to his heart and that he had to wear a compression-style suit to regulate his heartbeat. I mustn't giggle when I'm saying things like that. That could be a real thing. Anyway, she accepted these strange conditions because she loved him, Michelle.
Oh, she loved him. Couple.
She's
too.
Like, okay, fine. I'll do it in the dark or with my eyes shut.
Anyway, with my hands bound. Oh, God.
For 3 months, they'd meet at Chloe's flat every Sunday and sometimes midweek. Kai had bought Chloe an eternity ring and she told everyone that they were going to get married. When Kai left after they had sex, Chloe looked out of her bedroom window and saw Gail Newland driving off. But she assumed that Newland must have given Kai a lift and that he was getting in the passenger seat. Bing, bing, bong, bong, bong. There's a little alarm bell going on.
Ding, ding, red flag.
Red flag. Eventually, Chloe became suspicious. And on the final occasion that they had sex, she grabbed the back of his head and got her hand caught on something and it didn't feel right. So she ripped off her blindfold and saw Gail standing there with an enormous pink strap on.
No! Oh, my God!
Horrified, Chloe ran into her bathroom and locked herself in. There was a bit of, you know, a bit of an altercation. And I think then the two women, I think Chloe, even though she was naked, she was in her own home. She had to find her clothes and she ran outside and Gail followed her. And there's CCTV of the two women having an altercation in the street.
I'm sorry.
There's more about the strap-on. It comes up later.
I was just thinking, I hope Jen knows what a strap-on is. But otherwise, she's not
going to explain it to her. I think just my description alone kind of, it's fairly self-explanatory. Anyway, after that, Chloe claims that she felt dirty and ashamed and began self-harming. So she reported the incident to the police in 2013. Now, this is like a year later. And Gail was...
I think if that was me, I would feel more than dirty and ashamed. I'd feel like a fucking idiot. How did you not realise that big pink strap-on was not a real pee-pee?
Well...
peeny penis.
Well, that is a good question, Michelle. She reported the incident to the police in 2013 and Gail was convicted in September 2015 and sentenced to 8 years, only to be freed on appeal in 2017.
Fuck. Okay.
Yeah. Massive. But there was a retrial. And during this retrial, Gail tells a very different version of that story.
Ooh.
Plus, the prosecution or the defence do ask that question, Michelle, and the big pink strap-on gets wheeled in. Apparently, the jury said they could smell the rubber from where they were sitting. And the balls don't move. They're rigid.
Are they fluffy? I wonder if they're fluffy.
They're not fluffy. No, it's all just rubber. It's a rubber, just like, it's enormous by the sound of it. They couldn't get a bigger one. She says, So Gail says, this is her version. She says the two women first met in 2011 and that she and Chloe were both students at Chester University. They met at a gay nightclub called Gender Blender.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Chloe asked Gail if she was gay. Gail said yes and claims that Chloe told her that she was also gay, but she was struggling with her sexual identity. Gail says, Gail being the one that's also Kai, Gail says she told Chloe about her coping mechanism to help her meet other women, and that was her alter ego, Kai. And it was the first time she'd ever told anybody about Kai, who had been her alter ego since she first realized she had feelings for the opposite, for the same sex, at the age of 15.
Okay.
So when Kai asked Chloe to be friends on Facebook a couple of days later, Chloe was fully aware that it was an alias.
Huh. Okay.
Gail said that she didn't know what to do when their relationship became sexual, and she says she was a virgin, and it was Chloe's idea to buy the prosthetic penis, which was, as I said before, rigid, bald, enormous.
Pink strap-on.
Probably had some veins tattooed on it. I don't know.
They don't
I'm
tattoo
sorry.
Them. They actually mold them. They
That's
mold
what I
the
meant.
Veins into the, the veins.
You've
into
seen
the...
one. You've seen it.
I haven't, only on TV.
All right. They agreed to conduct the sexual part of their relationship as Chloe and Kai because both of them were struggling with their sexuality. Okay. So on the evening of the big reveal, mm-hmm. Gail, sadly, had tried to kill herself. She jumped off a bridge into a canal in Mollington, Cheshire, injuring her leg. She survived, obviously, because she then went to jail. Some say that this was evidence of her guilt, but Gail says it was because she was desperate and heartbroken. I mean, these girls had been friends for over a year.
Yeah.
And they were a big part of each other's lives. But the police asked her at the time why she jumped, and she told them, I've done something I shouldn't have, and now my friend can't forgive me.
Oh, well, that could be anything.
It could be anything. In court, Gail says this was not a reference to sexually assaulting or deceiving Chloe. It's because she'd called her crazy and tapped in their argument.
Oh.
The argument that ensued after the reveal. For her part, while on the stand, Chloe had been unable to remember certain key elements due to what she called post-traumatic stress. And this is where it comes out that she had agreed to have her hands tied. That information was not previously known when Gail was sent down for 8 years in the previous trial. This trial, she suddenly offered up this information saying that she had willingly tied her hands behind her back every time they had sex. And when the prosecutor said, the defense said, well, why did that slip your mind? It was a major, she said, probably because it was really traumatic. The whole thing was very traumatic, this trial, because people really felt for both victim and
I
said,
I do too. I mean, I know I was laughing about the big
attacker
strap on, but actually I do feel a bit sorry for both of them because, you know, like here I am laughing, but actually there's two sides to this story and I don't, there's no winners here. They both lose in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. The defense team argued that you don't really need your eyes to know who you're being intimate with. Possibly senses are heightened. You know, you can you know the smell or the sound of their voice.
Smell of
and
that
wouldn't
rubber.
Chloe have realized? Yeah, the smell of the overwhelming smell of rubber. And wouldn't Chloe have realized the similarities between Kai and Gail, because they had the same birthday, the same
voice?
Unusual course, the same voice, the same, they went to the same uni, did the same course, they had the same taste in music and films, they both had a dog called Gypsy, and Kai apparently told Chloe that they sounded similar because they came from the same part of the country and had been friends since childhood.
Right.
This is what Chloe says.
Okay. I think something else is going on here.
Perhaps Chloe, I mean, there's a possibility that Chloe was so ashamed with what was going on that she just decided she wanted out and she didn't know how else to do it.
Yeah, maybe.
And then she felt disgusting. She changed her mind.
Yeah. Oh,
but then again, three women are named in court who said they were duped also into virtual relationships with Kai.
Oh.
Virtual, not
okay,
physical.
Okay, not IRL. They're not like getting penetrated by a big pink strap-on.
The most intense was with a woman named C, And it began 2 years before Gail had met Chloe, and it appeared to stop while she was with Chloe and then resumed briefly after Chloe went to the police. So C had been besotted with Kai, regarding him as her boyfriend and becoming jealous of other women in Kai's life.
Oh, God.
So when C or any other woman tried to meet Kai, it was always the same excuses, you know, the car crash, the heart disease, the cancer. But Gail insisted the difference with Chloe was that she knew that Kai was Gail.
Right.
Because they'd met IRL, etc. C eventually discovered Kai's true identity after combing Facebook and discovering Gail had all the similarities, you know, the dog called Gypsy, blah, blah. So she disguised her number and rang Kai's number asking for Gail, and Gail replied, speaking.
Oh, dear. Gig was up. Jig was up. Jig was up.
The jig was up. The gig was up. There is no doubt that Gail behaved in a duplicitous manner, but this is used in her defense. If C could figure it out so quickly, how was it that Chloe, who had been intimate one-to-one situations with both Gail and Kai, how could she not know? But anyway, the emotional jury found Gail guilty of 3 counts of penetration. That's a thing.
Okay.
And she was sentenced to 6 years and placed on the sex offenders register. So she's back in prison, unfortunately.
Fuck,
I don't know when this was, what, in 2017. So
that's fucking, I don't know if she got out. Jesus.
Yeah. She also, this is another detail that came out because it was kept quiet at the time because they wanted her to have a fair trial. So this next information I'm going to tell you was kept quiet during the second trial, but she was also done for fraud. She had to do 6 months for fraud in addition to this sentence.
All right.
She defrauded her former employers when she was working for a marketing agency. She created 10 false identities and posed as bloggers to raise payments for $9,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she was working, like, you know, when you're blogger that mentions different things. So a psychiatrist has since diagnosed her with gender dysphoria, which is a condition where a person experiences discomfort or distress because there is a mismatch between their biological sex and gender identity. Mm. And she's also been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, which is a form of autism, as well as eating disorders, anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder, and depression. Poor thing.
God.
Then she's in prison. And she's on the sex offenders list.
Yeah, that's basically life over. I mean, because she knows how to create new identities, so she'll just do that and life will go on.
Yeah, hopefully she can come out and she'll be able to start again. I mean, I don't know, how old will she be? She's 27 or something now, so she'll be in her 30s, late 30s
that's
or something.
That's not the end of the world, but...
Yeah. But I mean, this thing has happened a few times before. There was another case in 2012 where a 20-year-old girl called Gemma Barker was convicted of sexually assaulting several friends while disguised as a man.
How?
In 2013.
I don't know.
I guess
get it.
People are very trusting. Perhaps this is the generation of people who happily send pictures of their boobs and vag online.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
they
without
all do.
Thinking about it.
Nudes. Everyone sends nudes.
Yeah. In 2013, Justine McNally was convicted of 6 charges of sexual assault while masquerading as a man. And in the same year, Christine Wilson, who had been diagnosed with gender identity disorder, was placed on the sex offenders register after pleading guilty to sexual relationships with 2 teenage girls while disguised as a man.
Oh, God.
It goes on. There's another one. 23-year-old Jennifer Staines in 2016 was sentenced to 39 months after pleading guilty to sexual assaults on 3 teenage girls.
Oh, my God.
I mean, this is going on.
It is going on.
But the question at the end of this is, how do you quantify it? Is it rape because it's misrepresentation? These girls have willingly gone to bed with somebody who possibly groomed them, definitely deceived them.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you go about...
This is the ethics. This is a question of ethics and law because...
Yeah.
It's so blurry, and we are going into uncharted waters, you know, since the age of the internet and online grooming. I mean, it's not a new thing, obviously, but it's become so much more easy to mask your identity online.
Yeah.
But
then when they meet in real life, Michelle, I mean, I don't get it.
Yeah,
would you have sex with someone with a blindfold or meet them? You wouldn't even meet them. This is why they're going for young girls, obviously.
Yeah, who are a bit naive, maybe a bit sheltered. Yeah. But, you know, it sounded like Chloe was none of those things. You know, she'd been at a bar where, you know, not a gay bar, but like a
It was a night called Gender Blender.
Oh, a night called Gender Blender.
Okay. At a nightclub, yeah.
Right. Okay. But even still, she obviously had some questions about her own sexual identity.
To go to Gender Blender, you know that you're going to meet people who are blending their gender.
But anyway. I don't know. And this is why I think it must be so tough as a lawyer to unpick like the details of these cases and figure out what are the crimes, because
well, they've all done serious time. You know.
Yeah.
Gail Newland being the longest.
Right.
At 6 years. I mean, she initially had 8 years, but then there was a retrial. Yeah. She can't have another appeal. That's not allowed.
No, right. Again, I think there's so much to unpack with this in terms of like motivation. You know, a little bit like Samantha as a party. What's the motivation here?
Well, I think the upshot is that most of these girls, these women who were masquerading as men, and you know, it was explained earlier in the story how Gail felt gender dysphoria. She was discomfortable or distressed about the mismatch between her biological sex and gender identity. And perhaps Chloe had a touch of that as well. I don't know. And that's why she went along with it. Maybe she didn't go along with it. Who knows? It's her word against her word.
Yeah, but people who with gender dysphoria, they will either often become trans or they'll identify as non-binary. So they're not going to start putting a strap on and trying to deceive people.
Well, maybe that journey's not so easy and clear cut, Michelle. Just become binary, non-gender. Perhaps it's a really long road to get there. And in the meantime, you're experimenting, which is another thing that Gail said they were doing. They were just two young girls experimenting with their sexuality, you know, mucking around, using a bit of fantasy just to make it feel better in the moment.
Yeah, no,
exploring things.
Yeah, I can see that. Going back to the idea of nudes, have you ever got a dick pic?
Yes, I have.
Not from your husband. Have you ever received one?
Hang on. Have I received a dick pic? No, sorry. I've never received one, but I've seen one. A gay friend of mine. This is way back when I didn't really know that this was a thing. He was showing me pictures, the outrageous pictures that he was being sent of giant penises. I didn't even know that they could be real. I've never seen a penis like that in real life.
I've got hundreds of them on my phone.
Why?
Well, just from when I was single, before I met Andreas, and I don't know, this is just still on my phone. They're all in the cloud.
Why would you send that? I think that's for, you know, for your eyes only
But people think, once she sees this, she's not going to be able to resist me. But honestly, they're horrible.
Why have you kept them?
Well, I told you that it's not that I kept them. They're just in the camera roll. Who has the time to go through and scroll
through? I've got
through?
Time to delete.
Go through my phone and delete the dick pics.
I'll delete your dick pics.
I've got loads of them.
Oh, my God. Any that you thought, what the hell's that?
Yes, there was one where the guy,
Should we be talking about
it? Was erect, and then he had a full-size...
We don't want to shame boys in their tools.
It's not shaming. I'm about to tell you. There was this one guy. Okay. He had... It was so you could get a measure of how big it was. He had a full-size can of Coke and next to it, like... As a kind of measuring stick,
yeah,
and then it was, and then it was a few inches bigger than that.
Michelle, can I just ask? Is the reason why everybody was sending you these penis photos because you'd said I like big dicks, so don't apply if you don't have one? I bet you did. Do not bother if you've got less than a Coke can sized. So they're all sending you these pictures compared to their can of lilt.
I think it was because they knew I was little, because you put your, no, but you put your height on, and so I think I just had big guys with big dicks trying to impress a little girl.
Oh,
it's all wrong. Anyway, I'm so glad
that's
I'm not
upset
single
me.
Anymore.
Awkward
Orcs.
Well, thank you so much, Geordie, for that intriguing story.
Well, thank you for your very intriguing story as well. And thank you to our listener and part-time researcher, Yannicka Bailey, for the heads up on As a Party story.
Yes. And I think she's actually sent you some more ideas, hasn't she?
She has.
Okay.
She has.
So we'll be coming at ya.
So big up.
Big up to Yannicka.
Coming at ya.
Oh, well, thanks so much for today. Always good to see your face.
Yep, same.
If anyone out there has anything they want us to cover, any stories, any ideas, please get in touch.
Get in touch. IRL. No, not in real life. Just send us an email.
Virtually. Yeah. Virtually.
Hello. Hello eavesdropping@podcast.com.
Yes, indeed.
And that's it from us at
Eavesdropping.